Welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode is writer Tony Black. Tony has many a writing credit to his name and has been active for some years now. So he was kind enough to give me some of his time to talk about why that is, how he got started, where he is now, and so much more. We are focusing more on non-fiction writing in this particular case, but it's still a fascinating conversation, and there's many different avenues in which Tony has taken it, including blogs, websites, his very own book, podcasting, and so much more. So let's get to the conversation. This is Nonfiction Writing with Tony Black. Hello, Tony, and welcome to the Fundamentals podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, Harley. It's great to be on. I'm really honoured to be asked.
No, the honour's all mine, mate. We've been talking back and forth for a few years, and as I said to you before we started recording, I've been keeping an eye on what you do and your writing, and it's really great stuff. And so when we started talking naturally about what you wanted to discuss, writing seemed like quite a really organic way to go about it. So we're going to talk about that, and I think we agree we're going to go more down the non-fiction route, because that's what you specialise in, isn't it, really?
I suppose. I worry saying I specialise in anything is me putting myself out there. But yeah, I mean, that is kind of what I do, more than fiction. So yeah, that's fine.
Well, you've got a number of credits to your name that would beg to differ, so, you know, would validate what I've just said. So yeah, I guess to begin then, how did you get into writing? Was it something you've always been passionate about, or did you study it in college, anything like that?
No, I've the closest I've come to actually studying any of this would be I did drama at university some 20 years ago nearly now, and I did a screenwriting module. So because for years I used to write scripts. And so that's the closest I've ever come, doing a little bit of screenwriting. So I've never learned technically anything in terms of writing. I just always enjoyed it, really, you know, even from when I was really little. It's hard to say when there was a point where I just started. I just remember particularly writing when I was a kid, because I'm a big Star Trek fan. So I used to write a lot of Star Trek sort of fanfic.
Okay.
When I was a kid. But I also used to write them in like notebooks and things like that, because this was the 90s, you know, we didn't have home computers, you know, or if we did, it was like a Commodore Amiga that you'd be playing Dizzy the thing on, and you'd just be pressing the, There was nothing sophisticated to type on. So I used to write them in notebooks and things, but I do also remember, and bless my mum for indulging me in this, but I used to read magazines, like at the time there were things like Starburst and TV Zone and all these kind of old magazines before the internet properly was ubiquitous in homes, and it would have all the write-ups on episodes of TV shows I loved at the time in the 90s, like the X-Files and all the Star Trek stuff. And I created my own magazine.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I used to write little reviews of episodes of things like the X-Files and Millennium and all these 90s shows I used to watch when I was about 12, 13 years old.
That's awesome.
And I'd cut out pictures and I'd stick them in, and then I'd put, and I was trying to emulate these things. It was very, very sweet, really, I suppose, little boy kind of thing. My mum was very, she hadn't got a clue about any of it. Like, she never watched any of this stuff. She was watching Curry and EastEnders, you know, and I was watching all these American imports. And she'd read it and she'd look at it and she'd go, oh, that's very interesting. Like,
yeah.
if it was a child of mine, I'd be like, what the hell is this? Like, but so that kind of encouragement, I think, made it easier for me to actually like to feel like it was something that I enjoyed and carried on doing, whether I was good at it or not, really. So
yeah
it goes back years.
Oh wow, that's a thank you. That's an incredible insight to begin with, and no, I can relate to that little bit. You know, I think everyone who's got a hobby, a passion, you know, when you're exploring it in childhood, a parent's nodding smile of approval is always good, even if they have no idea what you're on about, or even if, you know, it's whether it's a child bringing a kid, bringing their mum a crayon drawing, or, you know, or if it's like my mum suffering through me going, I can play this song, blink, you know, and then having to go, yeah, that's something. That's really cool.
It's making noise.
Exactly. So I'm imagining then, as you say, you go to university and then you're doing that module. So tell me a bit more about that then, with your work with scripts.
Well, I mean, it was strange because we were writing things like, we were putting together like short films, actually. To be fair to my university, it was Wolverhampton University in the early 2000s, this was. And they were keen to sort of give us, a lot of it was very physical theatre-y kind of stuff. To be honest, it's kind of stuff that I now find cringeworthy to even watch, let alone take. Some of the things I did, Harley.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, there was one whole play where I was dressed in a toga, like, for the whole thing.
Okay.
It's just, and me and my friends, who we're all still mates, like, you know, we sometimes look back on these pictures and we're just like, oh my God, just cringe city. So that side of it, which was the main side of it, really, I was never that bothered about. I should have really done a screenwriting course. I should have really done film studies, because there was a point as well, we were doing a film studies module, and we'd get to go and sit in the cinema in Wolverhampton, and we'd watch things like The Third Man and Raging Bull, and then I loved that. And I think now I think back, why the hell didn't I do that instead of drama? And so those kind of modules, screenwriting, film studies, and things like that, really leapt out as the things that I loved. And I suppose we were trying to write short films, to then the idea being that we make one as part of our module. And we did. We made one, the Black Country Museum in the Midlands, which is, I don't know how well, if you know it or anyone listening knows it, but it's a very accurate recreation of like the early sort of Peaky Blinders sort of era, I suppose, if you can visualise. Industrial Revolution kind of stuff. And it's brilliant. Like the whole atmosphere, it's fantastic. So actually being able to perform something we'd all sort of written, filmed, and then we had it shown in a cinema in Wolverhampton, was a great like culmination of all these little things I enjoyed. So the little bits of screenwriting, the little bits of, you know, watching things to sort of inspire how you make this kind of stuff. And I suppose I was doing it at sixth form as well, because I was this sounds so pretentious.
Okay.
I was rewriting Anton Chekhov, of all people.
Oh, well, you know, he needs a bit of a rewrite, doesn't he? I mean,
he needs a rewrite. He's, you know, who is he really?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, when you've done with that, move on to Shakespeare and, you know.
I know.
That's but it was great.
Because we were putting on, we had to sort of adapt a little bit of like a story for screenplay sort of effect. And I did the Caucasian Chalk Circle, it was called, by Chekhov.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even remember anything about it now, Harley. It's 20 years ago plus. So I've no idea what the story is anymore. It was something to do with a judge.
Okay.
And I wrote that as a script, as a play. And my drama teacher at sixth form thought it was good for what it was, you know, for like a 16-year-old or whatever. And that was a great experience. So these little things all sort of, you know, factored into a general sort of enjoyment. I think, you know, because I haven't obviously gone on to be a writer as such in sort of screenplays, but I think it sort of influenced why I find unpicking films and TV shows so interesting. Because once you learn a little bit about how they construct this sort of stuff together, you start to think about how it works. And I think maybe that's part of why I went down the road I did in the end, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, because where you are now as a, you know, more established writer is definitely a different field to script writing, it's safe to say. So how did that sort of transition come about then?
Well, I for years, really, it was more, I mean, all through like my 20s, I was kind of then, I'd left university and I wasn't in anything artistic. You know, I'd started working in schools and things like that. And I was, for fun, I started writing screenplays, like partly fan fiction stuff, but also a little bit of original stuff, but mainly sort of fan fiction stuff. And it was actually screenplay format. So they were written like TV shows or written like movies. And there's a website called MZPTV out there, and .com. And it's all the stuff's on there, all the things I'd written. And it's loads of stuff. I won't lie. It's like years worth of kind of scripts. And not all of them are very good. But some of them I'm actually still quite proud of, even though it's years and years ago now.
Oh, cool.
And it was there was a whole community. Like in the end, like one of the ushers at my wedding was a guy I met on that website. You know, so
nice.
I've made actual real life firm friends out of it. And so that was something I did for a long time. But I found myself on that forum just sort of writing occasionally, sort of film reviews here and there, and commenting on film. But I wasn't really writing critical analysis as such at that point, which is kind of, I suppose, what I do now, really. It was only really, I'll tell you, a turning point was when I found Letterboxd.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with Letterboxd?
Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah, quite a famous movie reviewing site, yeah.
Movie review site. And I remember stumbling across them sort of towards the beginning, around 2012, I think, was roughly when they came about.
Okay.
Something along those lines. And that immediately sort of clicked with me. So I started writing stuff on there for every film I saw. And I think it was around that sort of point. As I got to about 30, I sort of started to transition more into writing this kind of stuff. But there was no one big thing that transferred from the writing stories into writing and analysing other people's stories. I think I was just doing it in my head. I think I was just sort of watching all this stuff and building up a knowledge base from my own, like, you know, just, I'm not classically trained, I don't have degrees coming out my arm, I don't have anything like that, but I've just watched a lot of stuff, I've read a lot of stuff, and you sort of learn by osmosis a bit, really, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like that, and I guess it seems like it's quite funny, because I think on the surface, you could look at it, what, script writing, reviewing, those are two separate fields, but actually it's, from what you've just said, it seems like there are skill sets and a mindset really behind them that you've kind of just blended in to the two. And it seems like a natural progression. And I think you're right. I think if you're a film lover, like I consider myself a big cinema goer, and that everyone's got that internal critic or that internal, you know, analyst going on in their head. And that's the wonderful thing about movies, isn't it? Is we can all get different things from it. And so we all come away, hence why you could have like 10 people go and see a movie, you can ask them, what did you think? And you'll get 10 different answers.
Definitely.
So, it's natural, I think, for all of us to develop that kind of mindset. And if you've already developed the skills in writing and you've got the ball rolling, I can see how the two kind of meet somewhere in the middle. And I'm guessing then as you sort of carried on, you're writing more for Letterboxd, you must have enjoyed a lot of that then and just naturally was gravitating more and more towards that.
I became a little bit obsessed with it. I'd be writing like 500 words on basically every film I'd watched, and I've watched some rubbish, Harley. You know, like over the years, I really have. And I, you know, writing 500 words on, I don't know, Paul Blart Mall Cop. Nobody should be doing that. You know?
There are life sentences that are less painful than that, surely.
Right, exactly. So I'm like, you know, there was a point I remember being at home poorly. I had like the flu or something, and I was just watching films. I was off work. I was watching films, and I was frustrated. One of them I remember very vividly was Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. It's the one where he goes, "Attica, Attica, Attica." I've probably seen the clip.
I have. Yeah, funny. Yeah.
And I watched that, and I was so annoyed because I had no energy to review it because I was exhausted and I was tired and I was angry at myself.
Oh.
I was like, I haven't reviewed this
because
I was that into it. And that was, to be honest, that was a bit of a point where I went, I should probably not do this all the time. Because this is getting a bit much.
Right.
And I was still, it was still overlapping with a little bit of the script writing at the same time. It's funny, you know, I've never really thought of the connection there, really, between the two, actually, now, since you've said, until you've said that, and how there might actually be a link. And I think maybe there is, in the sense that when you're on a purely amateur level, which I've always been, you know, in terms of the writing, it was pure fun. I have no screen credits or anything like that, you know. But I'd like to think we got to a certain level of quality with it. And I'd like to think if anyone does go and check out some of that MZP stuff, you might read some of it and think, this could be filmed. You know, this could actually, maybe with some work here and there, some rewriting and stuff, it's not that bad. And I think when you're thinking about stories and how they work, I think anyone who reviews anything critically has an understanding, whether they realise it or not, of how a story works and how a structure of a story works, whether it's the script or the visuals, and usually it's all blended together. And it allows you to form a viewpoint based on what you've seen, what you've experienced, the knowledge you have, and the internal sort of workings. Because I think for me, the critics that I enjoy the most, or the reviewers I enjoy the most, are the people who I think understand the filmmakers and what they're trying to do, as opposed to just looking at a piece of work and going, I didn't like that. You know, and like, you know, you said how a lot of people have that internal critic. And I think most people do when they think about it. But some people, they'll just receive something completely passively. You know, you might know, you know, random members of your family who aren't really into films. And they might just watch something on the telly on a Saturday night or whatever. And then you'll go, what do you think? And they could be watching Psycho, right? Classic movie. Yeah. And they might go, no, that's all right. And if someone says that to me, right, and I really don't say it to them, but in my head I'm thinking, how can you just say that word? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I 100% get that, mate. That is something that,
you know,
boils my blood when, like, there's something that is something like that film, for example, that is so layered, and
again,
not without risk of sounding pretentious, but like, you don't have to have a degree to understand the themes and the incredible stuff that Hitchcock did with that film. You just have to be paying attention. And I feel like a lot that I agree with you. I feel like I have that experience a lot. And I used to have it a lot when I was going to the cinema really regularly, and I'd come out of films and, you know, I would watch a film and go, oh, I loved it because it did X, Y, Z. And I like what the director was doing. And even again, I'm not a film student. I don't know any of the technical terms, but I can appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about what the story he was trying to tell, or what a certain thing that an actor did that I thought was really effective. And I'll have all of these thoughts, and then I'll turn to a friend of mine and they'll just say exactly that. They'd be like, yeah, it was all right. And I'll be like,
it was all right.
like, what do you mean? And I'll just have to walk away, because I'll just be like, it's just a film. It's just a film. It's just a film. It's okay.
And that's it. That's exactly it. It's just a film. And I say these things with that kind of, you know, caveat of it is perfectly fine for somebody to just go and watch something and not really think about it as such. But I think if that's how you want to engage with something like this, fine.
Yeah, that's true.
But my brain doesn't work that way anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it ever did in a way. I think even when I was younger, I think I was still interested in how something works like this. You know, a piece of art in this case works. And I think that I think more people are like that than the opposite, actually. I think more people go into a movie, whether they're watching at home or whatever, and they come out at the end of it, and they'll critique it in some way.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's not to the degree where they've got all the contextual knowledge and all that stuff, they'll still maybe talk to their family. If it's a film worth watching anyway, they'll talk to somebody they're with and go, I liked it because of this. And then you get a little bit of a back and forth. So I think so many people do that in their mind anyway. All I've done with writing is sort of try and develop that for me. And, you know, along the way, thankfully, some people have enjoyed reading some of it. Like, you know, because I think first things first with this stuff, you've got to want to do it for yourself, I think. You've got to enjoy doing it for yourself, really. And then if anyone else enjoys it, that's a bit of a bonus, I suppose.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely a big part of it, because as you sort of touched upon there, really, I think the inner passion to do something like this is definitely needed. I think it's safe to say in more or less any art form, you have to have that. You have to have that inner drive to do it yourself, because there's going to be a million other people who are doing the same thing. So if you're in it to get money or to, you know, be noticed, sorry. You may eventually end up in that position, but that will take years. So if you're in it for that reason, you won't last 5 minutes. And I think that's in any art form, especially in writing, because there are lots and lots and lots and lots of movie critics, podcasts, all that stuff.
Tons.
But yeah, I think the people like yourself, Tony, that have a lasting voice. And I would say this from just an audience point of view, when I listen to someone like yourself or read your articles, is that I can tell that you care. And that's what I look for.
Okay.
If I'm reading someone's thing, is that they're adding their own spin on it, and ultimately what you're saying, that I can clearly tell he obviously enjoys this. There's obviously a part of you that does this. I mean, it might be worth the audience knowing that you do this in your in your spare time. This isn't something that you're, you know, living off yeah. making millions. You're doing it because you care and because you love it.
Yeah. I also have an exceptionally patient wife. Like, exceptionally. More patient than she gives herself credit for.
Right.
But yeah. Well, that's very nice of you to say. Thank you. I mean, it's... There will be people out there who, like with me and any other person, they'll read it and it's not for them, you know, or they'll just not be very interested. And I think, you know, some people are, and I've met people like this, both in the writing and the podcasting realm, which I do a lot of as well, in that they're nervous to sort of share their thoughts in a way. They're nervous, yes, about putting themselves out there. Because maybe they worry. And you know what I find a lot of, actually? People who are extremely worried about how they will be perceived when they're recording something. So quite often, if I'm recording with somebody and they make a mistake or they get something wrong, they will want that cut. Even if in the podcast they're realising what they've done. They're realising, oh, yeah, I've got that wrong, haven't I? Oh, yeah, it means, oh, no, yeah, you're right. Actually, you know what I mean? They'll want that cut away because they're worried about how people are going to perceive them. I, for the most part, keep that stuff in because I think, for me, we don't know everything. I don't know everything. Just this week as we record, I've learned about giallo movies, you know, the sort of Italian slasher movies from the early 70s and how they influenced things like Friday the 13th.
Right.
Now, I never knew anything about that before.
Okay.
I'd heard of giallo, but I'd heard of things like Bird with the Crystal Plumage and all that stuff, but I'd never watched any of it. Recently I have, and I've learned loads of things, which will then inform maybe future pieces I do on whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's a process. You're constantly sort of picking up and developing stuff, and I think either your voice or the way you write sort of changes with that as time goes on. You know, if I was to read something I'd written in 2014, which was roughly about the time I started putting a blog, first blog together and all this kind of stuff, and what I record about podcasting, it would be different. I know it would. I'd be looking at it thinking, this is missing things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that now I probably would be able to draw together. So it really is a constant process of learning for the, like you say, the fun of it, the joy of it, definitely. I'm almost certain I'm never going to make a living out of this. Like, I could be doing it till I'm 80, Harley. You know, a few years ago, I co-created with a friend of mine a website called setthetape.com, which is still going, thankfully, because it's got a bunch of people involved who are still curating it and things like this. But honestly, one of the reasons I stopped doing it was because when me and my partner first went into it, we were hopeful that we could try and make it into one of the movie sites online and gain some revenue and pay writers. And we soon realised it's just, you are fighting such an uphill battle. And there are already dozens of established sites out there. And I didn't have the energy to do it, to be honest, and to chase that. And I was like, you know what, I don't do this for that, you know, for the getting the clicks to get the money, to get the... It's not how what I do it for.
Totally, Matt. And again, that integrity, I think, is so important, especially in writing, because sort of to go down this little rabbit hole with you, I think it has become thankfully, a real backlash now to the kinds of websites, particularly in media journalism, that rely heavily on that clickbait revenue.
Mm.
And it's a joke now. You know, there's several websites that I'm not even going to dignify by naming them because we all know who they are.
I know you're talking about.
You know exactly who I'm on about.
I know.
If anyone wants to know, I'll tell you what, I will shout out. We'll shout out an excellent Twitter account, which is, I think it's like Clickbait or something like that. I'll find it.
Film Clickbait. I think. Something like
it's
that.
It's incredible because they just call all of these people out. They save you the hassle of click. Because a lot of these guys will write I'll admit, enticing headlines sometimes and make you go, especially if you're like myself or like age, you know, or yourself, Tony, who are very, very, you know, curious about these things, these latest releases. And let's face it, we're nerds. So we're like, oh, what's that about Iron Man? But then that's how they
100%.
Do it. Yeah. And then it's like a, you know, 1,000-page article, which you have to scroll past 50, 100 adverts to get to one what could have been summed up in a sentence as we don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I will give those guys a shout on Twitter because, you know, they're doing the Lord's work as far as I'm concerned, exposing people like that. But that's the point,
right,
though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, if that's what happens if you don't check yourself, I think, if you don't do what you and your business partner did and go, hang on, what are we doing here? Because it's easy to go down that rabbit hole and chase the money, but it doesn't go anywhere. And the trouble is, then there'll be hundreds of other sites that will do exactly the same thing, and you'll just get, you'll become a joke. And yeah, I think if you're getting into writing, especially if, you know, you dear listener, want to get into it, here's a great piece of advice from Tony, is basically do it because you love it.
Yeah, do it. And you will almost certainly find people out there who like or are interested in what you want to say. If you've got an opinion and you want to share that, do it, whether it's verbal or written or anything like that. There's been one thing that's been a big thing lately has been writers making sure they get paid for the what they do. Now, I'm a bit back and forth on this, because I think, yes, I agree that in an ideal world, anyone who puts work out there that they spend time on would get paid for that work. Yes. But we don't live in that world completely, I'm afraid. Not everybody who puts an opinion out there and they want to share it with other people, maybe beyond just their own personal blog, is going to get paid, because there are so few outlets that pay for critical writing, particularly in popular culture, which is kind of my area. And it's so hard to get a foot in the door with a lot of these places, because like any other business, they've got their regular contributors who they know and they trust and can deliver and all these things, and they don't often want to take chances on other people, you know. I'll say that for, I'm sure you've probably heard of him, but Simon Brew with Film Stories.
Yes,
I have. Used to be the editor of Den of Geek. Credit to Simon Brew, who I don't know personally, really, but he's giving people opportunities who haven't necessarily been paid for work before on Film Stories, and that's great. And he's a big arbiter of making sure you get paid. But luckily, he has the platform to do that, and he's using that platform in a really good way. There are so few people who are, in a way, though, and doing that, and I think it's really hard. And I just don't want it to put people off writing, because they think, oh, if nobody's going to pay me, then what's the point? It's like, well, no, the point is you having a go. It's you putting yourself out there. It's building that confidence. And it can do wonders for mental health as well, I think. Sharing that love of what you do. It's not just about getting paid. It's not just about reputation. It's about the joy of sharing something. Even if you're reviewing something that a million other people are reviewing, like Star Trek Discovery, say, or, you know, Lovecraft Country that's just finished. Who cares? Just review it. Say what you think. Because if you love it that much and you're passionate about it and you're interested, then it's worth something. And I think that's what I'd say to anybody, really. Just write, just do it, you know?
Where would you say is a good place for people to begin, then? Are there any sort of platforms you'd recommend going to, or is they better off just starting out on their own?
Well, I mean, I would say if anyone's interested in films, I'd check out Letterboxd, actually, because while it has been known as being a little bit toxic at times, there are a lot of good people on that platform, and you'll get toxic people on any platform, to be fair. These days there are a lot of good people, and it's, you can use it as a film diary, and the great thing about it is you can, if you can friend people on there and then get friends back, like a social media network in a way, and then you might get likes for some of the comments, and, you know, if a few people get a like here and there from somebody who's read what you put and, you know, enjoys it, then that's going to boost your confidence. So I think on that basic level, if you're testing the water, then do go on something like that, because you'll meet other people like-minded, you know. That's certainly for movies anyway. For, there isn't quite an equivalent for things like TV, say, or say comic books, I don't think, or, you know, all these different areas, novels and that kind of, or book writing and that kind of thing. Beyond that, I'd say start your own blog space, really, I would say. Start your own blog space, which is free to do, really, and then, I mean, this is how I do it, but I utilize social media by pushing things out to people. So I will use my, not just say my own Twitter or my own Facebook, but I will join Facebook groups, Facebook communities. And I know Facebook is the devil for a lot of people, but, and yes, Facebook are using us every day, but you can also flip it around and use these platforms, I think, for yourself. Things like Reddit, you know, find the groups, find the subreddits for whatever you're interested in. Like right now I'm doing season reviews of Alias, the TV show from the noughties. And every time I write an episode review of Alias, I'll put it in the Alias subreddit or I'll put it in the Alias groups on Facebook. Immediately you're targeting people who know and are interested in that. You know, and that's the way I do it. And whether it won't yield tons and tons of comments or likes or anything like that, but ultimately you will get people read it and you'll potentially get people to discuss it with. So I would say there are always ways to share, but you have got to put yourself out there. You have got to, you know, until you get to the point where you are a recognized, you know, unless you're Mark Kermode, right? Or someone like that. You've got to push it out there. You've got to not be afraid to say, this is what I'm about. This is what I've done. You know, are you interested? And I think if you do that, then you'll slowly build up confidence because you will get people interested.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, as you say, sort of coming back to it, then that's kind of how you got started with your blog. And then how did it sort of evolve from there? Because you've done a bunch of different websites, haven't you, over the years, and different publications.
Too many.
I guess that
chop and change a lot.
I guess that's another way then, is perhaps finding more communities as you go then.
Yeah, I think so. And also not being afraid to ask to get involved with some of these sites. Well, I mean, like one of the first I wrote for a few years ago was Flickering Myth, who are, you know, still around, do loads of stuff, Flickering Myth. And they were very good. You know, I said, you know, you're looking for writers, and the guy who runs that, Gary, is a good guy, and he was like, yeah, great, you know. And then I wrote loads of stuff for them over like a year period, and I burned out a little bit, and then after that I had a go at creating my own with Set the Tape, and I've done various other little bits for other websites. But I would say, you know, look at those websites, see if they're looking for people. You know, quite often they are. Quite often they want people to write for them. It's just finding the right time and the right window to do that, you know? So I think that's a big thing, because that's what I did. And then with the blog, it's funny because the blog I've got now that has sort of now transformed. So I started this blog in the middle of 2017, because I wanted my own space to write things. And I've been doing that on and off pretty regularly for the last 3 years. But now what I'm trying to do is broaden that out to encourage people to come and write who I know for that platform. It's basically a blog, sort of a website blog, but I want people to just feel like they can come and write stuff on there. And a few people have so far, and there might be some other, but it's very relaxed. It's very laid back. It's still mainly my website, my web space. But if I can open it up and other people can come and write on there, I can't pay anybody yet, but if they want that space to do that, then it's there. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of where it's developed for me, as just somewhere that I can just write about what I want to write about, really. And then if any other things come up, if any other websites are available to write for, great, I'll take that opportunity. But it is hit and miss where that goes, you know? But I enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing it. And like I say, I would encourage anyone to get their own blog space, really, because you can do what you want, basically.
Yeah.
You know, just write about what you want.
That's true. That's true. And I guess the nice thing as well about what you're saying there is you don't necessarily have to worry, particularly in this sphere of writing, about having a hook or an angle. You just, be authentic is the message, really.
Yeah. Write about what you're interested in, I think, number one. You know, it can be anything, really. Like my interests are fairly along similar lines. They're all kind of creative, sort of pop culture-y, artistic stuff. But you can write about anything, and you know, don't be afraid to just put it out there on a space, really. And because that's all I really do. You know, it's just sharing what I want to share. You know, and it could, and just that, so it just so happens that I'm quite limited in what I like. Really. You're never going to see me reviewing like the latest Premier League football match. You know, much as I don't dislike football as such, I'm not going to suddenly veer off. Although I did write about the World Cup a few years ago.
Oh well, there you go. Yeah, you got further than me.
Maybe I will.
No, fair enough. You never know. Ooh. If anyone out there wants to challenge Tony to writing about Premier League or something, so you give it a go.
Hey, you know, If you throw the gauntlet down,
yeah,
I can write about how they're so weird because there's no crowds and yeah. It's just spooky watching a football match right now.
Without all the drunken hecklers, you're like, this feels wrong. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I just find it interesting because again, I've been sort of loosely in touch with you for a few years, and I've seen you do all these blogs and stuff with Flickr at Myth, and then out of nowhere, it feels like you just went, "Hi everyone, here's a book." Bam. And not only is it the kind of book where it's like, you know, I think of people like Charlie Brooker, you know, a famous journalist who write columns, and their books are basically just a massive collection of all the stuff they've written over the years, which is like, okay, fair enough. But you turn around and went into something it's almost at the core of everything you've been doing for a few years, and it's fascinating. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that then?
Well, thanks. The book is called Myth Building in Modern Media, The Role of the Myth Arc in Imagined Worlds. I didn't choose the title, to be honest.
who did?
That was my publisher, okay. McFarland, who I have got nothing but good to say about, to be fair. They are fantastic and they're super encouraging. And they're just terrific. It's a very difficult book to sort of explain what it is, to be honest. And I've had this problem with my family, I tell you. Like trying to explain to my dad, he could not be less interested in the stuff I like if he tried, right? Not in a bad way, not in like a dismissive way. No. He's a massive football nut and he's into all that. So trying to explain that to people has been tricky. In a nutshell, it is about essentially the mythology, the modern mythology of television and film, in a sense. In that when the programs I found myself and the films I found myself interested in always have a broader world building behind them. So my favourite ever show is The X-Files, which sort of coined the term of a mythology in fiction, a mythology of its own, the alien mythology. The idea that underneath the story that's being told, and in that case, it's a couple of FBI agents investigating the paranormal, there is this entire backstory and fascinating history that is rippling underneath and affects the characters. And you find that in so many things. We've seen it in Game of Thrones fairly recently. We see it in Westworld now. We see it in Lovecraft Country, which I mentioned earlier, which is just finished. We see it in Lost, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so many things. And it goes back years. It goes back to, and in the book, I sort of draw a line from stuff like H.P. Lovecraft in the 1930s, who is in a major comeback mode right now, Lovecraft. Everything is a bit Lovecraft.
Yeah, I recently heard a podcast episode all about his sort of life story and the building of the Cthulhu myth. This is something I've always been like vaguely aware of, but you're right, it's having a big resurgence. And
this is it. I do mention that. The Cthulhu mythos, you were about to say, is exactly what this is. It's a mythos, a myth arc, and it all sort of ties together. So you've got this line of people, writers, you know, people writing books and fiction who are telling stories, but there's a wider sort of world around it. So this book is very much about that, and it's about how does that affect the kind of things that we're seeing today, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has itself got a mythology, for instance. And the sort of TV shows that did have it and people haven't really heard a lot of, or things that are a bit more cult, like, say, The Prisoner from the 1960s and all this kind of thing. So it sort of draws all these things together. And it sort of came out of, I think you've said that quite nicely when you said it sort of distills everything that I've been talking about, because I kind of think it does. In a weird way, it's sort of all the things I've sort of been. It was wonderful writing a book that where I was could do chapters on The X-Files and Lost and Millennium and all these things that I've just adored for years. And I could have done loads of other stuff. I could have included Babylon 5 and Battlestar Galactica and all these things, but you know, there's only so many hours in a day.
Yeah.
But like, I do think there's a sequel in it, to be honest. I do think there's another book there one day. But it came out of the fact that a friend, do you want me to tell the story?
Yeah, please do.
So a friend of mine who has been quite an inspiration on me, actually, a guy called Darren Mooney, had written a book for McFarland, an American publisher, And I would say to anybody, if you do happen to read anything I write, Darren is doing what I do, but at a lightning warp speed of intelligence that I will never reach. Darren is an astonishingly good writer.
Okay.
And he's a lovely bloke as well. I've done many podcasts with him and things like this. And it was thanks to Darren that I was connected with McFarlane, because I knew he'd published through them, and he hooked me up with the editor of this. And it was, for considering that publishing is very difficult to break into, it was incredibly easy. And I hate to say that in a way, but it was literally, I have this idea for a book which seemed to just coalesce in my head. And they were incredibly receptive, you know, and it was a pitch and it was a bit of writing to prove what I can do. And we were off. And it took a year nearly. It was 2018, the craziest year of my life, I think, Harley. I was getting married, and I wasn't just getting married, but we were basically staging the entire wedding ourselves, because we got married on a farm.
Oh, wow.
And it's a story in itself, but the cow shed, uh-huh, was basically our wedding reception,
okay,
area. So we spent months cleaning out a cow shed full of cow feces,
right,
like up to your neck.
Oh,
I did more pressure washing in that year than I'll ever do in my life, I'm telling you. Right? So, and if you look at the photos now, I'll have to send you a photo of it.
Right? Please do.
Because if I say so myself, and it wasn't just me and my wife, it was a whole team of people who were marvellous. It looked amazing. And now the cows are back, so you can imagine how it looks now. But that year we were getting married, I was writing a book. At the same time, well, when we were at the farm, I'd steal some time and I'd be writing this book at the same time. So quite how, and I was working and all this, and quite how I managed to do that, I don't really know, really. But I did it, I got it done. And then it took a while to publish, not just because of COVID, because it came out in June, but it took a while because there's a big, you know, process for it. But I was as surprised as anyone else, to be honest, Harley, that I did it in a way, because it was something that I hadn't planned for the whole of my life. To be honest, I thought I'd write a fiction book first.
Mm.
I thought I'd write a novel or a story, because I've had things drafted or little bits of things written for years, but I've just never had the push or the impetus to finish it. So it was a surprise to me, but it just sort of all came together. Just I think I had a lot of these ideas brewing, and like I say, the publisher was great. I think it's, you know, I don't know if it would have happened if it wasn't for them, you know, giving me a chance, really. Because that was it. It was, I don't have any great qualifications. I'm not well known. I don't have any, you know, mega, mega fan base. It was just they took a chance, really.
Mm.
And it's very nice now that I'm on my third book with them.
Brilliant.
With hopefully more to come, really, eventually. So there's one that's going to publish next year, which is all about Star Trek and critical history.
Okay.
So it's basically tracking the 1960s through to now, and about how Star Trek reflected the world around it. So whether it's the Vietnam War, the Cold War, sexual liberation, LGBT,
right,
all these things brewed together.
Yeah.
And yeah, that'll be out next year. Hmm. And I'm currently writing one on J.J. Abrams. So
wow, okay.
And the work of J.J. Abrams. So yeah, it's quite expansive. That's everything from Armageddon, the Bruce Willis film, mm-hmm, which he wrote,
yep,
back in the 90s, all the way through to Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, and how terrible it was. But we won't go into that.
Do you know what? Yeah. No, just side note, people that are listening.
Yeah. Opinion, yeah, not fact, opinion.
Yeah, no. I kind of can't breeze past that, because I'm just like, I agree. And I love Star Wars. And genuinely, if there's anyone out there listening, I would love to have someone come on and just talk to me about Star Wars and why, you know, because I'm a big fan as well. It'd be good to kind of, because some people, whether it's Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, this sort of thing, they go, well, what's the appeal? So it's nice to have someone to come on and go, here's why, because it's awesome.
Here's why. I know a guy. Yeah. I do know a guy, Harley.
Oh, put me in touch.
I'll put you in touch with him. I know a guy.
It's on my list of things to talk about. I'm thinking this will be a good topic. But anyway, yeah, I'm with you. I do think I have issues with that. And that kind of comes back to what we were saying earlier about going into a film And I remember seeing that with my wife, and my wife's just like, yeah, it was a Star Wars film. And I'm coming out with like gritted teeth, just like, I cannot believe they did this. And on all the way home, I'm just ranting. I'm just like, all these decisions, it doesn't make any... And yeah, I won't go into it, but...
I'm so similar. When I come out of a film, I do the same thing. I will sit in the car and I will go, and my wife will go, what do you think?
Yeah.
10 minutes later, I've said my piece. And I go, what did you think?
It was all right.
She'll go, oh, it was okay.
Yeah.
She is very good. She does have a lot of critical opinion of herself and stuff, and she does.
Yeah.
There are times when I will be speaking for like 10 minutes, and she'll just look at me and go, okay then, like, because I'm going way far down a rabbit hole, and I'm like, okay, this is the time I need to pull back.
But anyway, reeling it back in, because this we will end up going down a completely different route. I don't mind tangents here, but I can just feel myself with all these points that are about to slip out of my mouth of like, and it's this is not the time and place. Anyway,
sorry.
It's fine. But no, that I mean, fair enough. J.J. Abrams, that's a huge amount of work to cover, and I think that's probably a really encouraging thing to people to think about. Then the fact that you're doing three separate books on three separate topics, but that's kind of the joys of writing. I think in general is you can pick on a chosen topic as long as you love it, and you can just find a way of expressing yourself on that, and you can educate, because I've started reading your book and I find some of it really fascinating, even just like the opening chapters, and just like, oh right, I didn't realize that, like you said, like I've recently heard about HP and it was like, oh yeah, well that I can see how all of this stuff links in, and so it was nice to read your writing and have the sort of that world explained and opened up. And I kind of feel like personally we live in a world where media is becoming extremely easy to consume, and it's great because there's lots of it, but it also is dangerous because it's starting to lose its value, you know. And I feel like writing is something that, like me personally, I'm trying to get into a bit more of a habit now of reading, because I love listening to stuff, I love music podcasts, I love watching films, all that stuff, but I think like people like what you do, I think is a hidden art form that should be given the time of day, even if it's just 15 minutes, if that's all someone can manage in the morning or at lunchtime, to just sit down and read something, you know, because it's a completely different way of taking information in, and I think it can be a bit more, it can resonate a bit more with some people.
Well, thanks. I mean, I agree. I try and read quite a lot myself, not necessarily always just about the topics either that I write about, to be honest. I do a lot of reading. I read a lot of nonfiction, really. I read a lot about politics. I read a lot about the world, because I think what I'm interested in with what I do, and this is what is in the book that you've started reading, which I'm very grateful for you to buy. Thank you.
Totally fine.
I'm interested in how the kind of things we watch and how what media we consume, like you said, how it either reflects what's going on or how it's been influenced by what's going on. And you don't get that. And this is something, and like I say, this is why he's quite an inspiration, because this was something that Darren Mooney does a lot of and he's very good at. But there aren't a vast amount of people out there doing this, looking at something with, and there's a great podcast you might enjoy actually, Harley, called Super Context, which is just finished.
Okay.
With two guys who they pick a topic. In fact, I'm just listening to one on The Prisoner, actually, I mentioned earlier. And they do all kinds of topics, not just films, TV, they do music, they do various different things. And they take a step back and they don't just analyze what is in that product. They think about what is around it. You know, what is the super context? Why is that being made now? How is it being made? What are the deeper reasons behind it? That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in not just looking at, say, Lovecraft Country again, which I mentioned because it's quite fresh in my mind, and doing a piece on what was in Lovecraft Country, but I'm interested in why is that now happening? What is it saying? Why is it so, in the instance of that, why is it so acutely sort of resonant now because of Black Lives Matter, because of George Floyd, because of the increasing conversation about black prejudice and everything like that? And I mean, that's a massive thing that I'm starting to see, a real change in the way black cinema, black television is being portrayed, in terms of them really standing up and crafting their own narrative in a way that I haven't seen before, which is fantastic to see. And So there's lots of things, interesting things that I try and pick up on by reading around that will hopefully influence what I want to talk about and how I want to digest this media. And I think I'd love to see more people doing that kind of stuff as opposed to just writing a review of something.
Yeah.
Because there's not, it's not to say that that's not interesting, but there is only so much that you can say on that terms that isn't being said by a million other people, you know? And I think having that wider knowledge and trying to educate yourself, I try and think everything I'm writing about, I'm trying to learn about. This is what, why I do it. It's not really to teach people anything. It's about me learning, really. Like more than genuinely, like I just want to know as much as I can about the world and about life and about why things fit together and everything. And if by sharing that, if some of them people are then slightly interested in looking at that stuff themselves, then brilliant. But I'm doing it. It really isn't to sort of impose on other people what I think or to make people, oh, I'm teaching them this. It's not. It's more just I want to know.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes by writing about it, it helps me figure things out. It helps me understand a text. It helps me understand other issues more clearly. And that's the kind of writing I enjoy reading as well, to be fair.
Brilliant. Yeah. And sort of thinking about that in the context of your latest book, it's absolutely something you want to learn about, because a myth arc, and as you kind of explain it in your writing, that is something that we have been seeing, yeah, probably a massive resurgence since the 90s and since all these sort of TV shows, yeah, especially. And now I kind of laugh when I was reading through your book, because I was like, yeah, it's true, like everything's a cinematic universe now, like, you know. And why is that? Well, it's because that's the kind of storytelling that people are obviously gravitating towards. There must be something in it that we identify with and that we like. And again, you go on to explain that very well in your writing and sort of why that is. And I think, yeah, that's a big part of it. It's something that obviously you wanted to know more about and understand. And that obviously led you down a rabbit hole to looking at people like H.P. Lovecraft and all these books and going, oh, that's what that's all about. And that's why it's so popular. Yeah. And I find all of that absolutely fascinating. I'm curious, did you read much of his stuff? H.P.'s?
Pretty much all of it, because I've got.
Fair play to you.
I've got. It was pretty intense few weeks, I won't lie. It's pretty weird.
The podcast I listened to is Do Go On. It's like a comedy one, and they were doing sort of like his life, and they touched upon the Cthulhu thing. And I'd heard of it through, like, there's the Metallica song Call of Cthulhu, which, well, they spelled it Cthulhu.
Yeah.
And then there's like Cyber, because I'm a metalhead, so it's like that imagery comes up a lot. And then they touched upon it, and they explained that it was this entire world, you know, world within worlds, and all of them are occupied by big gothic scary monsters. And there's no real protagonist that you can identify with or things like that. And when I was looking through it, I thought, blinking heck, if he read through all of those, fair play. That must have been a very intense, like, yeah.
I don't think I got quite through all of it, but I got through most of it. I've got this massive, it's a great book. It's a massive contained volume of all of his stuff. And it's massive, fat. It could kill a man. It's huge, right? It's massive. But not suggesting that's what you do with it,
No.
It could. But yeah, it's fascinating, you know. So much, and this is why he's making a resurgence, particularly because so much of what we consume now is influenced by. I mean, if you just read H.P. Lovecraft and then read any Stephen King novel, and you will see how Stephen King is completely H.P. Lovecraft reborn.
Okay.
Same with Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is massively Lovecraftian. If you read Lovecraft, you'll see it. And this is the thing. It's like, Once you expand that and you read as much as you can around it, and you find these things out, and you watch things and you listen to things, you'll see connections. You'll see how these things overlap with each other and how they influence each other, you know. And why now we're at a point with media where I think people are craving. I think that they're craving, and I think one of the things I sort of say with this book, I think, is that they're craving a level of continuity.
Right.
I think. Because there is no continuity in anything else right now. I mean, look at where we are at the end of 2020. Everything's a bit chaotic. And I think with media, the reason people want cinematic universes and they want narratives that can connect and characters that connect and stories that connect is that they want some level of order, I think, in chaos. And I think that's one of the reasons why these sort of universes appeal and why it's happening to everything. It's happening to Star Wars, you mentioned before. It's happening to Marvel. It's happening to Star Trek. It's happening to... I think it will happen to James Bond eventually, you know, in the next decade.
Probably.
And in fact, my next book hopefully will be on James Bond. That's the that's my next plan, but that's next year. But then I think there's a continuity between what I'm writing as well. I think the if you look at myth building and then you look at the Star Trek book next year and you look at the Abrams book and what I'm going to be talking about with, which is slightly different because it's a critical study of him as a director, but you'll see connective tissue. And then you'll see connective tissue if I write a book about James Bond as well, in that they're all, everything is connected.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what interests me. I like seeing the webs form.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things is it's rare when you get that moment when you're writing something and you go, I think I've hit on something here. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, yeah.
You could be writing 4,000 words in a piece and you might think it's fine and you might be happy enough with it. And I don't really believe in the idea that all writers are tortured and everything they're writing is horrible in their mind.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get that image that you're with writers that they're writing something and they look at it, they're like, garbage, rip it up.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I don't. Most of what I write, I think that's probably all right, really. I think somebody will enjoy that.
Hmm.
I'm probably just an egotist. But like, no, I don't. I don't subscribe to the tortured artist, but there have been points where I felt like that it's not necessarily much innovative, but then you get that moment and you get that spark and there'll be something. And there is one thing in the book that I don't want to spoil in a way. I don't want to see if you can suss it out.
Okay.
But there is one thing I think I hit upon that I don't think I've heard anyone hit upon before.
Mm.
And that makes it worth doing.
Yeah.
I think when you feel like you've found something that, something in your writing, when you're analysing stuff and when you're thinking about stuff that you haven't heard of before anywhere, and that feels a bit like a personal revelation, and that's always nice. Doesn't happen all the time, but occasionally you get that moment, and that's one of the things that makes it worth doing for yourself, I think.
Absolutely. It's that's definitely, again, sort of cycles back to what we were saying earlier, that it's about, I guess, as a writer, to figure out what you want to say, having your own voice, having your own opinions, and having your own analysts. And and there's so much. There is so much to pop culture and storytelling. It's something that I don't think we'll ever be done with. And so, it is nice to go through it. And again, I would highly recommend people check out your book because it's very interesting.
Thanks.
Very well researched. And you're welcome. And it's a lot. It's so relevant, as you say, to today, considering that there's been a huge resurgence of people like Lovecraft, of things like the X-Files, like, you know, you mentioned the MCU, which, you know, I mean, my little pop here, you know, like, I'm a huge fan of all this stuff. And you're right, there is a reason why that it is all connected. And I really like what you touched upon there, that there's continuity in a world where there is no continuity. I think you're probably onto something there. That's really cool, and that's the kind of stuff that you can get into if you get into writing.
Yeah, I think so. I think I think everybody sees things in a different way. I mean, the stuff I'm writing about, I know that there'll be people who don't see it that way, and they see things differently. And that's the joy of it. That's the joy of any kind of analysis and writing about these things that you enjoy. There are so many different ways you can approach a text. You can approach a piece of material. There is no one right way. You know, there is just what you think and are confident enough to you know, think. And I think the key to the good writing I've seen is when people try and back it up with some level of knowledge or evidence, or, you know, a sense that they've done some of the work trying to get to that point they're making. Or, and, you know, I don't get that right every time. You know, I'm fully aware of that. There are times I think I'm skipping things or I'm being a bit lazy, and I'll see that if that happens most of the time. But I think if anyone is listening to this and they are wanting to write about these kind of things that they like, the best thing to do is to just start, and you will develop as time goes on. You will. I'm still developing. I know I'll be a better writer when I'm 48 as opposed to when I'm 38 now.
Right.
And I look forward to that. I look forward to that. And I, you know, I'm happy to feel like I'm just always going to be learning more and taking more on.
Absolutely.
And as I said before, if other people enjoy it, like you've said you've enjoyed some of the stuff, great. That's brilliant. That's fantastic. But first and foremost, you've got to look as a writer at what you're doing and go, yeah, I quite like that. I'm quite pleased with that. And, you know, that's number one. It's like with anything, I think. If you're not happy with yourself, it's harder for other people to be happy with you.
Yeah.
And that is one of the hardest things to do,
yeah,
generally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can imagine that would also affect your workflow and your output, you know, if you've not got that. You said something a minute ago, which I kind of want to expand a little bit on. When it comes to doing the research, because when we're focusing here on non-fiction writing, that there's obviously, you have to do research, because usually the things you're talking about will be factual in some way or another, even if you're just analysing something. As you rightly said, you've got to back it up. So would you consider yourself a studious person? Do you have to have that kind of mindset to do that? Or is that something that just grows naturally and you find your own way around it?
It's a bit of both, to be honest. I guarantee you, I promise you, I am incredibly lazy. Right? If I can cut a corner, Harley, I will cut a corner. Right? But if you are, particularly if you're writing a published piece of work,
you
have to put the work in. You have to go and, you know, in the days when we could go anywhere, I was going to a library quite often, Birmingham Library. And I remember getting books out and, you know, looking at things and that kind of thing, working in the library a fair bit. To be honest, we're lucky these days that we've got the internet, because most of the research I've done is online, really. Most of it is digging in and finding quotes, finding articles, finding other scholars who've written about things. And the majority of it is online now, which is great. But there's a lot of that. And you've got to sort of dig around and try and find, if you've got a point to make, you've got to find something to try and back it up. I mean, a whole section of my book is about the hero's journey, which is a whole sub-theory in itself, created by a guy called Joseph Campbell, who wrote a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And he's, that book is like, it's one of the hardest things. It's impenetrable to some extent. It really is, the way he writes it. But it's influenced so many things, including Star Wars, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the journey of the hero in a classical sense. And I try and tether that to shows like The X-Files, Lost, Millennium, who have these hero's journeys. And I, and to do that, you've got to read it. You've got to pick out particular aspects, particular quotes, and try and marry them to what you're writing about. But to do that, you've got to read. You've got to research. And that is something that, you know, the knowledge and the thinking can get you so far. But then if you really want to try and back it up, you have got to try and put some of that work in. But you've got to have that plan in your head of what you want to say first, I think, really. I think the research comes second, you know. You can have all the ideas, but I think that will get you so far. And then you've got to kind of go away and put in that research and look at things and try and connect your points up, really. And there've been times where something hasn't fitted that I've written and I've got rid of it, or I've stored it away, and or sometimes where you can't find that point that backs up what you're saying in a way. And sometimes that's frustrating because you feel like you've hit on something, but then maybe it doesn't quite sync up with the evidence, and you have to sort of ditch that, really. So it's
okay.
It does take quite a bit. You know.
Well, that's fair enough. And I guess you have to be malleable then in that sense, especially if you're writing nonfiction, that, if something's not right, you know, and when you're dealing with nonfiction, it's either right or it's wrong. So, that makes sense.
In many ways,
I guess you've got to throw the ego out the window a little bit and just kind of go with what you find out, what the information actually tells you.
Your thought process and your analysis is it's not necessarily right or wrong, but the detail that you're playing off has got to be, you know, the actual information. So if you've got a theory about, I don't know, something in The X-Files, and it's based on something that happened in an episode, you've got to know that's happened in the episode, or you've got to know that was the intention of a writer or something like that. And if that's not there, then that point might not work, or it might be something that you're just sort of throwing out there, and it's a little bit like, well, where's the basis for that? And I dare say there are things in my book where that hasn't quite married up. You know, there will be, I'm sure, like there will be. But it's trying to figure that out, and you get better at that with time, you know. But it can be frustrating when you're trying to find. There was one with my new book, the Star Trek one at least, where I'd found a quote from Gene Roddenberry, who created the show, and it was scanned from a newspaper from the 70s. So it wasn't online normally in text, and I copied it all out, wrote it down, and then I lost that file that I'd copied it down on. Could I find that web page with that scanned up? Could I? No chance. Drove me mad.
No.
I had to cut it in the end because I couldn't find that quote anywhere. Couldn't find it. So there's things like that where I had to do a lot of saving, and I use a piece of software called Scrivener, which allows you to. Sort of, you have a file and you can save notes in there. You can write your thing, but then you can do lots of other stuff. You can save things in various places. And
okay.
That's a godsend, you know. It's a real godsend.
It's like a useful tool to have.
It is good. Yeah, it's very good.
I'm just thinking about how frustrating that must have been.
It was.
So sorry.
It's like when you lose an essay. You know, when you've done an essay at school.
Yeah.
You didn't save. It's a little bit like that.
Yeah.
The worst feeling in the world.
Oh, I know. I've not had anything like that with podcasting so far. So far, the files have not disappeared.
That's good.
But yeah, I'm no...
You've jinxed it now, though.
I know, I said it now. It's going to happen.
It'll happen for this one. Yeah, you wait. You won't. There won't be any recorded left of this. It'll all just disappear now you've said that.
Oh, no. And all this good stuff is gone. Oh, dear. A moral of the story, then, is definitely make sure you save your work if you're writing. Yep. Make sure you've
Absolutely.
Got good software backing you up.
Yeah,
I love that.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. And I just think there's so much that we've kind of gleaned from this already, but is there anything else you want to throw up or anything you find really helpful or interesting?
Well, I don't really know. I think nothing massively leaps to mind. I just think it's just, again... So I just keep coming back to this whole thing of I just want to more people to do this kind of stuff and to feel like they've got the confidence to do it, you know, putting themselves out there. That's the big thing I keep coming back to. And it's so easy for people not to, you know, when it comes to particularly writing, like critically, to trying to think about analysing something they enjoy, which isn't. It's not to say it's harder than writing fiction, because I don't believe that. I really don't. But it's a different skill. But it's also something in a way that can make you feel more exposed, because when you're writing a piece of fiction, you're writing about characters, you're writing about worlds. You can, when you're writing a piece of analysis, you're writing what you think. And you're writing about what your knowledge is, and you're writing about what your interests are. And that can make you feel a little bit more exposed, I think, because... You might think, well, what if people don't agree with me? What if they think I'm talking rubbish? And writers are the most insecure people in the world, right? By nature, you know. Most creatives, actually, I'd say, right?
Yep.
Whether you're writing or you're
time.
Playing music or whatever,
big time.
You're your worst critic in many ways. So the instinct is to think this is rubbish, and it's one thing I've worked hard to, like I said earlier, to not feel. When I've written something, I've worked hard to think, yeah, actually, it's all right. I'm pretty happy with that. And I think that comes from a feeling that you are confident in what you're doing and what you're saying, at least from your perspective, is interesting to other people or interesting to yourself. And also feeling like that if people disagree, then fair enough. Like, you know, it's not about putting out a one world view of, this is how things are. This is how it should be read. It's more about feeling like I have that confidence to just write about what I love. And that's just something I'd say to anyone. Just go for it. Just do it.
That's awesome. And thank you. That, I think that's a lovely sort of sentiment to kind of wrap things up on. And just finally then, where can people find you? Because it's quite a long list.
Oh, yeah, let's shorten it. So
It's fine. I'll link to it all. Don't worry. Just actually
at
time of recording, I just put out my last episode this morning. And the amount of links that I threw in there, no one asked me to, but I was just like,
I just did it.
And I was all this stuff. So I don't mind, Tony. You can fire away as many as you like.
I'll keep it brief, though. I think really the best places to find me, there's three places. If you're on Twitter, you can find me at AJ Black Writer on Twitter. I am on Instagram as AJ Black Writer, but I mainly just post pictures of National Trust places I've gone to and books. So, like, if you're interested in either of them,
yeah,
fine.
Fair enough.
You won't see a selfie from me, though, because I don't really do them. Yeah, there's that. And then on Facebook, I've got a page, AJ Black Writer / podcaster, on there. And then there's also my website, so culturalconversation.co.uk, and that's where you'll find the writing, essentially. Also, as well, if you want to hear me more, go to wemadethispod.com, because my podcast network is called We Made This, and that's got all the podcasts I'm doing, you know, and I'm doing loads. So, like, you'll find it all on there, basically. But my mainstay is Twitter. If you go on Twitter, I'm there most of the time. That's where I mainly ply my trade. So yeah, come and have a chat. You know, come and tell me about what you think about. If you've read the book, thank you. Otherwise, just talk to me about any old stuff, really. You know, that's all good.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Cheers.
Definitely has. And there we have it. Thank you, Tony, for coming on and talking to me about all things non-fiction writing. That was such an enlightening conversation, and I hope you guys listening enjoyed it just as much as I did, if not more so, really, because it is for you guys. As much as I enjoy doing this, this is for you as well. So if you are enjoying the pod, please let me know. Let Tony know. I've linked him in the show notes here. You can find his account. It's definitely worth checking him out anyway, just to see what he does. His writing is fantastic. His book, Myth Building in Modern Media, The Role of the Myth Arc in Imagined Worlds, is brilliant. I highly recommend you pick up a copy. I have links that in the show notes as well. A massive thank you to all of you who have been supporting the podcast as well over the past weeks. Again, it's nice just to see it slowly growing. And if you want to reach out to me, tell me what you think, suggest a topic, suggest a guest, or just, you know, say hello. That's all good. You can do that with the show notes. I've put in my social media accounts. Both of them are Twitter and Instagram. I'm more active on Twitter, like Tony. That's, but again, Instagram's fine as well. They're both at Fundamental Pod. And that is it, really. That's all I have to say. If you like what you're hearing as well, feel free to write a review. That would be more than welcome. As far as I'm aware, Apple Podcast seems to be the only place where you can actually leave 5-star reviews and it makes a difference. So if you want to do that, do so and tell me, because you will earn a shout out on the show. That is all from me. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I'll be back again in a few weeks' time with a completely different guest on a completely different topic. So until then, stay tuned and stay safe.